Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Designers for Learning. This is our 12th webcast in the series. Today is Wednesday, December 4th, and I am very excited to be joined with some subject matter experts in the world of open educational resources. So my name is Jennifer Madrill, and could you just go around the group and everybody can introduce yourself and explain what you're here for, why you're interested in open educational resources, and what you do in that field.
Yes, sounds great. Quill, do you want to go since you're second in the video viewing, or do you want me to go?
Oh, it does not matter to me. Okay, I'll start. I'm Quill West. I am the Open Education Resources Project Director at Tacoma Community College in Tacoma, Washington. And our project works to adopt open resources to save students textbook money. And in the year that we've been keeping statistics, we found that we've saved students $360,000 in textbook costs collectively. Wow. So my big interest in OER is to continue to equal access education by adopting free and low-cost resources.
Excellent.
Love that. Love that. I'm Rhonda Nagebauer. I am the faculty success lead with Lumen Learning, and I'm also an adjunct instructor at Chadron State College, which is a little teeny state college in western Nebraska. I've been teaching there since 2009, and in fall of 2011, I started using open educational resources with all of my courses, and I just did some rough calculations the other day, and I think I came up with my own savings that I was able to extend to my students with using OER was over $20,000. So
yay.
That was pretty exciting for
yay.
The impact of one. But OER in all effects has been such a profound experience for me, not just professionally, but also personally, and really has driven me to embrace a whole new philosophy of what higher education and what even K-12 can offer for students, institutions, and even on a global scale. So it's just exciting for me. I get to meet great people like Quill and like Jen and so many others that are in this movement and in our community. So thank you for having me today.
Oh, I'm so excited to have all of you. This is great. And just I did not mislead anyone. David Wiley was with us. Rhonda, you can attest. Although he was in his vehicle driving, and so we were a little worried, and so he may try to join us if he finds a home base someplace on land, and he has another appointment he's got going at the same time. So he's very much multitasking today. But we did get to present generally the ideas that we're going to be talking about and got some feedback. We'll try to lace those in as we go. But in a matter of logistics, I'm not sure how people are finding us today. Some may be finding us on YouTube or over at Google+. But if you head over to designersforlearning.org/live, you can see the embed of our Google Hangout. And then if you go below the video window, you'll see a text chat. And you just have to type your name in, and we've got some folks in there chatting. And then below that window is a Google Doc. And we're going to try to use that. I tend not to be very organized once we get going with the conversation flowing. But I do have some points to ponder and kind of the reasons why we're here today. And so I thought I might just start out with that. I know Rhonda is aware, but I'm not sure if Quill is aware. I've been working on a project where I'm trying to bring together the instructional design community, faculty, and students with nonprofits and engage them in service learning projects. And so as part of that, pretty quickly I was approached by a nonprofit. And if you go to the Google Doc, if you scroll down, it's a woman named Kim Phillip, and she's from Grace Centers of Hope in Pontiac, Michigan, and it's a rehab facility that provides GED preparation for the clients that they serve. And so the GED is changing, and we can talk a little bit about that, between a 2002 version to a 2014 version. So their needs are quite great. They need to revamp the instructional materials they were using. They have staff and or volunteers that are doing tutoring, working with the clients as they prepare for the GED. And so there's a certain amount of train-the-trainer material that's required. And again, all that's changing because the underlying exam itself is changing. So that was one thing that happened. And then I was also introduced to a large group here in Chicago of tutors and mentors who, with either high school kids or after school programs or with adults, to provide augment what they're learning in school, trying to get people through high school. And so there's quite a large network here in Chicago, also in need of instructional materials, train-the-trainer materials for people doing that work. And so that's kind of my long-winded, that's why we're here. And so just kind of get the ball rolling. And Rhonda, we've had a chance to talk when we first started. Where do you see existing OER that's out there for, say, middle school to high school fitting in with what we're talking about here in terms of being able to adapt what's currently available or to maybe have to rework some things to make it fit?
Well, the beauty of it is we get to use these, millions of dollars, the philanthropic funding that's been out there. And so we have the resources. We know where they are. I mean, Quill is steeped into knowing, where to find these resources and how we can support, the nonprofits and teachers that are out there working with students. So we know that it's out there. But just like most big criticism of OER is getting it so that people can use it in adoption. So it's from a creation perspective, it's there. We just need to pull it together to make it easier for people to use and benefit from.
And so if you could kind of help me tie in, I know a little bit about what you do at Lumen, but how does this fit in with what you're doing? Are you working with a different age group, a different population with the resources you're working with, or is it kind of all comers, whoever yeah. needs help, you're there to help?
Yes, yes, and yes. A good part of my work right now with Lumen is supporting a Next Generation Learning Challenges Wave 1 grant. It's called the Kaleidoscope Open Course Initiative. And for the most part, those courses are what we could call our high enrollment general education courses. And so my work is supporting faculty who are collaborating cross-institutionally within the United States to develop courses generally for your first 2 years of college and help them either substitute the textbook or move all the way over, to OER and developing new assessments and modules. And actually, Quill is part of that work as well. She's a collaborator in our composition kaleidoscope team, and she's working with them in Comp 2. And because she's such a great resource, she's actually working with some other ones as well. And that's just Quill. She's just great, and we're so thankful to have her supporting Kaleidoscope.
Thanks.
And then the other part of my work is also with partners just through Lumen that might not necessarily be affiliated with Kaleidoscope specifically, but then a similar type of thing, supporting faculty, adaptive learning, assessments, and also just helping with online teaching best practices. So we do a fair amount of work with faculty support as well, and then institutional adoption and leadership roles as well.
Okay, so certainly a lot of alignment to what we're talking about. Yes. And then Quill and I had what, maybe a paragraph email exchange?
Yes. So
we don't know each other very well.
Good that
so.
Way.
This is awesome that I get to hear, and Rhonda gave a little bit of an introduction to how you fit in. But so what? Can you give us a little bit of a background on what you're doing as the OER director at your community college?
Yeah, so we're adopting kind of across the board, and any instructor that smiles long enough in my direction gets to hear about OER. We do adoption from our kind of transitional studies dev ed area all the way through to some of our high-end science classes. So we're a community college, so it's the first 2 years of school. I try to aim for our most enrolled classes because that has the bigger impact. But pretty much anybody that says I'm interested in OER, we try to develop something for them. And when I say develop, it means find and adopt a resource the best way possible. We've done a lot of work in composition, so our comp sequence, English 101, 102, 103 are all OER, but we've been working with our developmental ed faculty. We've been working with faculty in, we have a couple of people in the humanities who are really interested in this area, and then in sciences. Math is my next go-to topic. It has been for about a year and a half. So we are aiming to go kind of across the board. And GED is one of our next areas, actually, because of the change in the test and because, you know, students are going to have to pay for those practice tests now even, which is kind of ridiculous. So we're going to find ways to make that more affordable for those students, because in Washington State in particular, we don't charge them for those textbooks. So any resource they use for GED prep, our school has to pay for on their behalf. So we need to find cheap, free resources.
So yeah, you know, clearly you have the the subject matter knowledge on this. I didn't even know what GED exactly stood for when I started looking into this. I figured out the general education. I think I had, I don't know what I thought the D was, but it wasn't what it ended up being, which is, let's say I don't even read it, make sure I'm not messing it up now. So it's the General Education Development Test. Is that right?
Sure. I actually am not a subject matter expert on GED as much as I thought.
I did do prep research on this, so it covers what I think we would expect it to, right? There's the language arts with reading and writing, science, math, social studies, and I think that's it, right?
It's with four. The four is that, yeah, did you hit four? I think you hit four, right? Yeah. Yes. And so if you scroll down on the Google Doc, I did my best to do a little bit of homework myself, and I went to the actual website for the GEDTestingService.com, which, by the way, is now a partner with Pearson, which should get a lot of people interested. Ears might perk up going, ooh, commercial opportunity to take on the big boys here. So they are very much behind the materials for the, as you mentioned, the pretests, which is something we can talk about, which is kind of interesting, which my understanding there is folks take the pretest. It gives you a sense of where your weaknesses are, your deficiencies, where you need to spend some more time, and really how prepared you are to go take the test. So you're kind of preparing yourself for the test when you actually go to take it. Then they also have materials in the GED marketplace where you can buy prep booklets and do some online courses and things like that. But what I thought was kind of interesting, if you scroll down on the Google Doc, I did find some resources that were embedded in all that that talk about the standards. And again, I'm quickly going to go into another area where I don't know anything, Common Core standards, but there is a document from the U.S. government. It's like lincs.ed.gov. It's at the kind of the bottom link there. And it aligns the standards that are part of the GED with Common Core, which I thought was kind of interesting, especially when we're talking about potentially adapting some of the high school curriculum and thinking of ways that it could be used in this purpose. So, Rhonda, I think you said you did a little bit of digging on that as well. Is this something that you noticed as well, or, you know, kind of how do you see the alignment between what looks like the layout of the test is versus some of the resources you're aware of?
Yes, I mean, with Common Core, there's actually initiatives that are going on now. I just found out yesterday, I live in South Dakota and teach in Nebraska, and then Lumen's based out of Oregon. So it's really interesting to see how, you know, different states are handling Common Core. Nebraska hasn't adopted yet. South Dakota has even had lawyers talk to their Board of Education about you know, what Common Core means and using open ed type of materials. So, I mean, I'm really excited about the prospects of what's happening here. I feel like we're at a really great time and just a prime time for helping with bridging what OER can offer and how we can support the Common Core implementation too. So, yes, with the new test coming out, it's the 2014 version. Is that what they're calling it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. With that, you know, there is you know, interest there, and obviously that's where everyone's looking now. So it seems like a win all around if we can get more of this to happen.
So, Quill, when you were talking about taking the OER, let's kind of delve into that area a little bit more, the kind of the instructional design and how you're doing this. So what's your process? What's the design process that you go through to, again, find out what's out there without reinventing the wheel, but yet customize it to the needs of the faculty that you're working with?
So it starts, my background is as a librarian, and so I learned instructional design from the information literacy perspective, which really helps me because I treat every OER conversation about adopting OER as if I'm adopting information literacy practices in a class. So, and that usually starts with a needs assessment. As a librarian, that's kind of where we start with everything. We start by trying to figure out what you need to know. So, I usually start to sit down with a faculty member and we have the conversation about what they don't like about their textbook, or why they're thinking about OER. And those reasons range everywhere from, you know, I don't want my students to pay so much money for this tool, to my publisher quit publishing the book that I want and they want me to change, and I would like to know what OER is out there before I agree to that. Or, you know, they changed it and I hate the new textbook and I want to try something different, which does happen. You know, sometimes the publisher makes a change and it changes the whole way you teach your class and they don't want to. So we start with that, and then we figure out what is it that they love about what they're doing in their class right now and want to keep, and what are the things that they think they need to change because they need to reach their outcomes. And then we do a backwards design. So we start with, what are your outcomes? What do we need to be meeting with your outcomes? And then we try to find content that fits those learning outcomes. So, and sometimes that is a straight across, here's an open textbook, gift wrapped and ready to go. And sometimes it is chunking information together and building lessons. So because of my information literacy background, I try to build in a lot of research-based projects. I'm really aware well of what we're already paying for on behalf of the students out of our library, and I try to get faculty to think in terms of, if we have that resource for the entire institution, why would we make our students pay for it again? Mm-hmm. Because that's a big issue for me. So every interaction is slightly different, but that's kind of where we start. So, for example, in preparation for today, I sat down with the lead faculty, our department chair, who's working on the GED prep right now, and they're trying to get ready for GED and for this change, and asked her, what do you think we need? What are you doing now that works? What are we missing, and what are we going to need? And that's a hard conversation to have right now, because I think the GED folks don't know the answer to those questions because they're still not sure what the test is going to look like. Mm-hmm. But that's the start. We started with a needs assessment, so now I have a big list of things that she would like for us to have, which is a big step.
So now you're right where we're talking about where we're at. And I just saw Charlotte joined us. She's in an alternative school here, a network here in Chicago, working with students working toward their GED. And so that she was one of the nonprofits that reached out to me to talk about this. So she's kind of at the same spot you are. So where are you finding resources, or where do you think you're going to go next? Would it be as simple as starting out with the standards and trying to map it to what you're seeing on the Common Core, that type of thing?
I think we'll start there. Yeah. So we'll start by trying to figure out which parts of the Common Core are really covered, and we'll work towards those outcomes. So, and that has the added benefit for me that we're also working with our area high schools. So, if I can find, you know, materials, I can also shuttle them to the high schools and say, hey, check these out. Cause I think hopefully we can all support multiple efforts at the same time. So we'll start there. And we also talked about things that aren't, when we did our recent 10 minutes ago conversation, we talked about the need for test prep kinds of things, because the GED is computerized now. So students are going to need comfort in computer skills. Some of our students who are here to do GED prep don't have typing skills. So that kind of thing, which might be fairly simple to fill in, but we've decided we need some kind of module around that. And then we need a module in test taking fluency and literacy in that area. So we're going to start looking for materials there. So we're also looking at those kind of hidden outcomes that need to be included.
And I don't know if you had a chance, if in that Google Doc I have what I'm terming a request for proposal, which is the one that came in from the Grace Centers of Hope, and everything you've just mentioned is stuff that they said that they're concerned about. And then, as I mentioned when we started, one of their biggest concerns is that they need to match the instructional strategies to the age of their learners. And even though the materials, again, may be 7th grade math, 8th grade math, whatever it may be, you still need to adapt it for the you know, the learners that you're working with. And then also, when I was speaking with them, I was getting the general impression that there's two things at play here. One is preparing folks for the test, which, as you said, it's now on the computer. A lot of folks have not ever taken a test on a computer, let alone even really done and taken an online class even. So they're not even, you know, sure how to it all works and how to type an essay, for example, on the computer, an essay question. So there are those issues. But then there's also just teaching the subject matter, which is, again, we're not just prepping people for a test, you know. These are skills and knowledge that they're going to carry with them forever. So how are you kind of balancing that aspect of it, the test prep versus just hitting deficiencies, the things that they missed in high school or maybe had dropped out, and things that just need to be addressed and learned?
I don't know that I have a full answer to that yet, because we're still, it's still in the experimental game.
Right.
I think a lot right now we rely really heavily on the expertise of the teachers. So because we have seated classes where the students come in and they work with their instructor, we're relying pretty heavily on those instructors to provide that content knowledge and tell us where they need backfill kind of information. But we've created some things. We're talking in terms of the old GED is the old, the GED that is currently active until January is really heavy on reading comprehension. So the concept really is if the students have a good set of skills around reading comprehension, then they do pretty well on most of the test. But it's the, and then the math is always a big question for us. So, we've developed some resources around reading comprehension just in-house, which I'm happy to share with whoever wants them. They're on our website. The other thing that I think we need to be thinking about, though, is how do we couch this content so that it is interesting for, you mentioned, adult learners. So we're doing a lot of education in context right now. We're doing a lot of here's a novel, which is, you know, $12 or whatever that we'll have. How can we approach this piece of this novel or this nonfiction piece of writing so that we can also cover science while we're doing it? So we read a lot of materials that have to do with that. So the student is experiencing extended reading comprehension period of time, as well as doing some research on their own. Mm-hmm. To try to get to that place. So I think it depends on how you want the classes designed, I think, is the big piece. And for us, the big question is coming in at the place of those outcomes have shifted on us. Are we still meeting our goals?
Mm-hmm. And so how do students find you? Are you considered a GED prep approved facility? I don't know. How would they just come to you?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would say that, yes, we're considered a kind of degree prep space. We have an entire system around it. So there's a program that where you can come for high school completion, and there's actually several different ways to access that type of education at TCC. Yeah. So.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Because, again, this is so new, and I apologize to the people who are going, how does she not know this? But I really don't. You know, I'm very aware of the GED, but, you know, what are the other avenues to complete, you know, your high school equivalency? How does that
happen? Well, I think that is currently also in transition. So I know that we have a program for students who are under 21 where they can take classes and actually complete their degree, their high school degree here at TCC. So, and then they're actually getting a diploma. Okay. So that is a different program than the GED. And then Washington State, I'm understanding, has a new option for some schools where the students will actually be able to take classes towards a high school equivalency. So, and that's brand new, and we're hoping to layer that with the GED work. So, because it's all mapped to Common Core, we think. But, you know, everything's so up in the air around this because of the change in the GED test. Mm. And that whole, do we want to pay for, do we want students to have to pay an increased amount for a test? And do we want, is the test going to really meet the needs of our state? So we're still working on that.
So Quill, do your students, they do pay for the GED test or the institution?
I think that the students pay for their and I'm guessing the when I asked today, because I know that the cost of the test has gone up for the student, that the state subsidizes some of it, but the students are having to pay that amount, whatever it is, which I still don't know.
I saw a quote that it was anywhere from $120 to $400 for the test, depending on where you go, you know, to take the test. So I'm assuming that Tacoma hosts it and has, you know, people come in and facilitate. And
okay. Yeah, we do have a testing center. Yeah.
So, Ron, I was starting, when I asked Quill about how her approach to designing it, how similar or different is this to what you do when as you said, you work with the faculty to bring stuff in? What are some of the, I'm always curious about the instructional design process and how people do that. So, yeah. Can you kind of walk us through that piece?
Yeah, I mean, essentially what Quill described is how we approach it as well. I mean, we do treat faculty as subject matter experts. That is their role. And then my role as an instructional designer is to support them in making their course come to fruition using the open educational materials. So, you know, it definitely starts with the student learning outcomes, and sometimes those are departmentally, you know, decided. Sometimes it has to do with the institution. Sometimes they're immeasurable. There's you know, modular versus course outcomes. So really, it's just getting a handle on what that is, and then seeing if there are any ways that some of the courses that we've already designed or that perhaps are already out there might meet some of those objectives already, so we can pool some of those materials so that the faculty can vet them and decide if they'll work for them. Or, you know, whether we need to actually create new. And we certainly would rather not create new, because there is so much great material that's already out there. However, you know, it's what will meet the needs of the faculty, the students, and the institution. So, yes, student learning outcomes, backwards design, that's definitely how we approach course development for Kaleidoscope with Lumen, definitely.
And I think I just lost my chat room, so let me get back in here. But I also wanted, when David was on the call, as I mentioned before, David, when he was careening down with his, like, whatever phone that he had going. But we were talking to him about an organization that he is affiliated with in some way, shape, or form, which is sailor.org. And so if you click on that link that I just put in the chat room, or just type in sailor.org, I kind of like the way they laid this out. And I'm kind of looking forward to thinking of how, if I get some student groups working on this, they've got it based on this is a university K-12 or professional development. I could see very much another row in here where we're not saying it's K-12, but it's high school. What's the word you use, Quill? I forgot. High school.
Oh, I think I said equivalency, which
equivalency,
is
that okay?
That's I don't know what previous institution's word for it. I don't know.
Then
I use it.
See, I just picture people that do this for a living are going, what is she talking about? She doesn't know what she's talking about, which is largely true. But I just see such an overlay with what we're doing anyway. But anyway, so back to the sailor.org website, I could very much just see that another row for this, high school equivalency. And so I don't know if you want to, if you have the opportunity to click on any of these. So let's look at, like, for example, K-12. And then under English Language Arts and the way they lay things out with the core program, I could see very much a student group for a service learning project taking on one of these. So looking at what the standards are for the GED and then starting to populate it with instructional content, which is cool. And then when we're talking to David, we were saying, okay, that's neat, but then what about the other piece of it? Layering in some instructional strategies and maybe even having some type of online platform where tutors could go and, you know, teach and, you know, provide the instruction on some type of platform. So have you, I guess, thought of anything like that with GED specifically or other things that you work with where it's the actual kind of setting up a platform to provide open instruction beyond just the open educational resources?
Yes, I mean, we use, and Quill, your institution's using Canvas, right? Is all of Washington using Canvas, Instructure's Canvas, or is that...
Washington State has a license to Canvas for on all of our behalfs, but I think each college, if they wanted to pay for something different, can.
Okay. And there is a free version of Canvas that's out there for instructors as well. So, I mean, it is possible that something could be built. And, I mean, Jim Groom is doing something, I think, with a psychology course that's out there. I mean, there's a lot of free and open materials that are in the Canvas LMS. I think David's suggestion, he just likes WordPress because it's easy to get to. It's, you know, out there and easy to navigate and work through. We're into adaptive learning and we're looking at what we can do with that. So we're using Cogbooks and then using an LTI into Canvas or whatever the LMS is that faculty might be using. So there's a content delivery piece and then there's also the assessment piece. And so we actually build the assessments in the learning management system native to whatever the faculty or the institution requires. So Canvas, I mean, I love Canvas. I think you like Canvas too, Quill. I love, you know, how it is for an instructor to use. Mm-hmm. But definitely, I mean, having instructional materials that guide the trainer through, you know, how to present these materials to students is huge, and certainly having accessibility addressed. Readability is a big one for me when I look at OER, because some of it is really written at a high level and some of it isn't, so it's tempering that and finding what works for the specific populations that we're working with. And I think that's the most difficult piece, especially with working with developmental education or transitional studies that we've talked about, is the needs of the students or how we define that population is so broad and institution to institution. So, you know, figuring that piece out, how do we define what the GED learner is or looks like or what their strengths and weaknesses are is also a piece that maybe people have already analyzed, maybe Pearson is, you know, I don't know, but that's a big one for me.
Well, and just along those lines, language, even just poking around in the GED site, mm-hmm. they offer this material in multiple languages. I think Spanish was one I saw for sure, but that was something that they mentioned that, mm-hmm. you know, ultimately that's another layer added to all of this. And some of the nonprofits that I met with were those that were working with specific communities, so an Asian community, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And so that would be another piece of the layer of the onion, I guess, that would need to be pulled back as you're working on it. Mm-hmm. But could you talk a little bit, Rhonda, about the assessment piece? Because I think especially how that would come into play as far as adapting, you know, the adaptive piece of it. So I would assume you're talking about you assess and then determine where they're at and then go from there, but I'll let you correct me or fill in the blanks.
Yeah, I mean, and much of this is in an infant stage right now. I mean, adaptive learning using open resources, there hasn't been a flood of money going there. I mean, again, it's been in the creation of the OER. So getting the adaptive piece to it is really where Lumen's, you know, looking to fill that need for the community at large, for institutions that are interested in adopting, and also looking at the quality of the resources, the OER that they're using, as well as identifying gaps in the OER. So like Quill mentioned before, we do rely on the faculty to lead and guide us in helping with finding gaps, locating, you know, what assessments are working, aren't working. And you know, we're developing algorithms and you know, meeting those needs, but again, it's such a high touch piece right now. So, I mean, for the GED, I would imagine that we would model whatever this would look like, would model what the student's experience would be in the testing environment, albeit online or perhaps even paper or what have you. So, I imagine that we would look at it from that perspective. Do you agree, Quill?
I think so, yeah. And we talked about one of the models that we've been enjoying that I think I picked up from Lumen, actually, is to populate a class in Canvas so that the whole thing is there. So if the faculty wanted to just say, okay, my class is plug and play and just run a Canvas shell, their students would have everything they need. But what mostly what our faculty do when they when we set that up. So if I set that up for the math, GED math, I would set it up, and then the faculty would be able to choose which modules they're using and not using and which materials they like and don't like, with the hope that they would be telling us what they do and don't like about it so that we can adapt the resources and grow them. So that would be my preference. And you know, we talked about one of the things that we'd like to see is some kind of example test bank that comes out of OER in particular that models the way that the questions are designed for the GED so that our students can practice, because that's going to be the biggest thing. That's the environment they'll be taking the test in, so we'd like them to have access to that experience.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the work that David Lippman and James Sousa have built around MyOpenMath and how powerful that experience has been for higher ed. So how can that be adapted, if it even needs to be adapted, for the, I believe if you're taking the GED, you need to be proficient, is it at a ninth grade level, or you need to be prepared, not for the test, but to take the preparation or the materials that are out there. You need to be at a ninth grade level. Is that right? I think from what I was looking at, that's my assumption, is that a student needs to be at what we could call high school level or what have you. So in my opinion, I believe that MyOpenMath would cover that. But again, when we talk about some of those issues that we've all already addressed with accessibility, readability, even just essential tech skills. Noticing, I think the huge eye-opener for me with using OER in a digital interface is that students are not proficient in what we assume that they are already, such as knowing the difference between web browsers and file extensions or even operating systems. My students are so deficient in that essential knowledge that we just assume these millennials or digital learners have already picked up on, and they're not. I mean, we're not teaching computer science in K-12, or I haven't seen much of that happening. And perhaps another leg of this is building that whole piece out. And I think, Quill, you already mentioned that you're working on that maybe from a modular perspective of, I mean, I hate to say that I need to get down to this is a mouse and this is a keyboard, but, there's some starting point. I know that GCF Learn that's out there, GCF Learn Free, I mean, they have a whole tech piece on that. It's not OER, but it is free. And I've been bugging them extensively about slapping a Creative Commons license on it so we could do more with it, at least give faculty the power to remix it with what they want to do. But at least that's there. And I've used that with my own students, and they actually really enjoy it and like it because they get to experience more, especially with Windows 8 or even how to run their iPad. They just don't know, and we need to offer that too. So I do have trepidation about the test going into an online version and what that really means for the student, and then also for faculty. We've got such a big content piece of the GED, but yet we still need to make sure that we cover what the students need to prepare them for the digital literacy that they need to be proficient in as well for success.
Yeah, and this is great. We've got the text chats flying away. I'm trying to keep up with it here, but
looking too.
It looks like there are people out there that actually do this for a living. So I really, again, apologize. I'm doing my best to keep up and learn as fast as I can. But Paige is mentioning something. She works with folks with a history of special ed services, and she was saying, in addition, that a lot of times the tests are given with certain accommodations. For example, the questions will be paraphrased and things like that. So that's another, again, layer to this onion to peel back. How are those types of things addressed and at what level, and does it happen in on one-to-one tutoring or whatever it may be. I don't know the answer, and I'm not sure how they make those types of accommodations for the test. Those are all really good questions. I guess we'll just add them to our laundry list.
and we should have that in with whatever the diagnostics are. And that's been when you talked about, you know, taking on the big dogs, I mean, I have great interest in finding some sort of way to use OER for not just diagnostics, but then even for those high stakes tests that students pay just tons of money to take and unfortunately might have to take over and over again. And so I worry that the impact of that is demotivating them to complete and to continue on with higher ed.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
Oh, go. No,
I was going to say, so we're kind of hitting that 40-minute mark where we kind of start to tend to run out of gas a little bit, but I just want to make sure before we completely run out of gas, thinking about looking forward. So I really do think this is something that I'm going to jump on with the service learning projects that we're working on here at Designers for Learning, and coming up on the spring semester, what I'd love to do is get a pilot group of 3 to 4 project teams taking on some of these in chunks that are manageable for the students in a 16-week course. So to do that, obviously there are lots of ways. You've mentioned Canvas, and we've talked about WordPress. We could even use a Wiki or a Google Doc or whatever. But you know, what would you suggest as being designers yourself? Where would you kind of start this process of starting to identify? Have a home base, let's say, where we're starting to identify what these needs are, to then start being able to farm them out into discrete projects for students. What are some of the things that I think? Well, I think you've used a Wiki on your site that I looked at, but I'll let you guys respond.
I think that's a huge question.
Sorry.
But I love it because I love the idea of discrete projects and getting started together. And I think that's one of the things that I would love to do. Because sometimes in the OER world, we're duplicating each other's efforts because we all hit the same crisis at the same time. Like, oh, no, there's not enough for arithmetic. Okay, go. And everybody's working on it, and we're not working on it together, which means we get some great resources out of it, but then everybody's put a lot of effort into one thing. And, you know, we also have to do science and social science here. So I would love to know which groups you're working with. Because then maybe we can take some of that load and help. And I think it doesn't matter which platform you work in. We use a Wiki for our kind of pushing out information about the OER project, mostly because it was really easy to put together. I could just as easy be using WordPress or a Google Doc. You know?
Right, right.
And I use Google Docs a lot. I would suggest something that allows you to build in assessment as you go. So Canvas I enjoy because we can build in the assessment part. You know, if we want to build quizzes, we can build quizzes, and they're there. And the students can practice taking something in a timed test-like environment. But that doesn't work if the free version – I haven't ever used the free version of Canvas, so I don't know how robust it is. And the other part is I find that when we use Canvas at our institution, we have to do a lot of browser literacy questions. Mm-hmm. But that's not a difficult thing, and actually it's a great way to enter that conversation about not all browsers are created equal.
Right. And that's why I guess I'm just drawn when I look at the Sailor page, it's just there. You know, you just go there and there's the instructions and there are links to the things. And again, these are kind of drilling down into usability and things such as that. But all the points you're raising, every time we start a new semester with students, even in the PhD master's classes that I take, we haven't used Blackboard at the school where I teach, but it's still a thing. You know, you just have to remind them, this is where you turn in your assignments. This is where you find resources. And it's just kind of all these little layers within the LMS that are kind of on top of what you're trying to get accomplished. So, and I'm just trying to keep up. Oh, Moodle, someone suggested Moodle in the chat room. Certainly that's a platform that folks use as well. There's so many good things happening in the chat room, and I can't walk and chew gum here.
I know. I'm having the same situation.
Exactly. So I'll try to pull those back and put them on the website as well. But I just really want to thank both of you. I think this is a great start to a conversation, and I love the quill. I think you said the word we at one point, and so I latch on to those types of things. Like when David replied that he was wanted to participate, I put him on the byline. Now,
love it.
Of it. So I kind of glom on to those we words and us. But thank you too very, very much. And please keep me in the loop, and I'll do the same as I roll forward with my deal. It sounds like we're all kind of in the same spot, trying to understand the changes to the test, where the needs are, and adapt things to the learners. And really, Robin, where did that come from? Rhonda, I just love the whole, I don't know where Robin came from. I love this whole, the adaptive learning piece, because that's come up with pretty much every nonprofit that I've talked to, is that trying to figure out the level at which the student's coming in and then try to tailor things using one-to-one tutoring, which is very different than, whole class instruction, which... Mm-hmm. We tend to mainly do. So, thank you guys.
Yeah, give me through this semester, and I should have more answers for you with the adaptive learning. So, we're trying to move beyond piloting. We've been piloting for quite a while now. We just can't quite find the tech piece that we love. So, we're hoping we fall in love eventually.
Yeah, and hopefully by that, eventually we'll start seeing, as everybody's mentioned here, the GED test isn't even available, so we can't even go out and try to take it ourselves or try to figure out how things are laid out in the test or take any of the sample tests yet. They don't exist. So, well, thank you guys very, very much, and thanks everybody in the chat room. And this is probably going to do it for this year for our webcast. We'll pick everything up in January, and maybe at that point, hopefully at that point, we've got some student teams lined up, and we'll be talking about a similar topic with a group of students, which is my fingers crossed. I hope we can get that going by January. So thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.